Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland high atop Bridgestone Arena. Predators are out on the ice going through practice. Be a week of practice before they head to Edmonton to get geared up for the qualifying round. And don't forget, they'll have the exhibition game on July 30th against the Dallas Stars. Willie Donick will be back in the fold a little bit later this hour. We'll also hear a little bit from Tyson Nash, who covers the Coyotes, former player. Learn a little bit more about the opponent of the Predators. That also coming up this hour. Chase is on vacation this week. He'll be back on Monday. We say hello and good afternoon to Adam Vingan. He covers the Predators for The Athletic. That's where you can find his work. Adam, how you doing?
Hi, Darren.
We good?
Look at me.
We good? Hey, look at that, huh? Huh?
Hey.
Very good. You're not hidden behind Fang Vision, the big jumbotron. I can actually see you. You can see me. This is good.
Yeah.
How was your weekend?
It was good. Uneventful, but that's how life typically is these days. But staying healthy and safe. My temperature coming in today was a cool 97.9 degrees. So as cool as a cucumber over here.
Well, it will be anything but uneventful moving forward here. Let me just start with what we were just talking about at the end of the last hour. It is pretty amazing when you think about all the tests, the protocols the NHL just did, and to come back with zero positive tests, pretty amazing. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's great that the NHL is having success in that regard before they enter the bubble.
Yeah,
just because your hope is that once the players are in Toronto and Edmonton, of course, depending on which conference they play in, that those ultra secure, as the NHL is calling them, the phase four secure zones, you hope that similarly to the NBA in Orlando, that once they are encased in those bubbles, that they'll be much safer. So the fact that, you know, all of these teams in their home markets are able to practice and they're not turning up positive coronavirus tests, especially when you consider some of the markets that have seen spikes in coronavirus, including our very own. It certainly is encouraging to know that many players have not suffered with the virus.
What are we officially calling this, by the way? I've been calling it July training camp. Willie tweeted out summer camp, which kind of made me laugh. But what are we officially calling this?
I've been calling it the return to play training camp.
Okay. Return to play training camp. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's play coach. All right. Let's do that. Let's have a little fun on radio. So first line. So do we believe game one against the Coyotes, it will indeed be the Jofa line?
Yeah.
And if so, what do you think of that?
Well, I wrote about it today on theathletic.com, which everybody could go check out if they so choose. But I understand why John Hines made that decision. It's just that under these circumstances in this return to play training camp, summer camp, July training camp, whatever you want to call it, there's very little time for experimentation. It's not the same as a normal training camp where you have 4 weeks of practice and six or seven preseason games before your first regular season game. These guys have 2 weeks of practice before an exhibition game, and then 3 or 4 days later, they're playing in the playoffs or the postseason. So there's less time to mix and match lines. So you hope you find, as I said in the story, you hope that the Johansson line can recapture its magic. And it was certainly nowhere near as effective this season as it has been in past seasons, although they were not together anywhere near as much. And you hope that the time off allowed Victor Arvidsson to heal from his injury, allowed Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson to refocus and refresh, and that they can pick up where they've left off in previous years.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you, because you say in that article, can they recapture their magic? How do you answer that? Do you think there's a chance they could recapture their magic on the return to play?
I do, but I really do think that, and I said this in the story as well, that I believe, and Darren, you can tell me if I'm being a bit hyperbolic here, but I believe that the success of the Predators' top line as well as the entire team hinges on the play of Ryan Johansson. I think if Ryan Johansson returns to play the way he did during the regular season, this team is tough. Just because you can't have a number one center playing like that in the postseason. So for their sake, they better hope they can recapture their magic. But I really do think more so than any other player on the team, it hinges on 92.
Well, I agree with you, and I'll tell you, I'll take it even a step further. I know fans over the years at times, and it's 82-game seasons, a long season, and there are two guys, and one is on this team, the guy we're talking about, and a guy that's a former Predator that's no longer on this team, that at times the fan base would get frustrated during the course of a long regular season. Ryan Johansson, of course, is the guy that's currently on the team, and you probably know where I'm going with the other guy. In PK mm-hmm. Subban, right? But
yes.
I will say this. They also got paid big bucks, and we always say you get judged on the big stage and the bright lights, and you get judged on your play in the playoffs. You could certainly make the case, too, that both have certainly had their moments where they have shined big time in the playoffs, and that's why you pay guys the money, right? So I guess you're asking the question, can Ryan Johansson – return to, you know, form of what we've seen where he's had some big playoff moments.
Right, and then remember, of course, that he signed his 8-year contract this summer
after
of the
2017.
Final.
Yeah, no doubt.
So,
and
so
he was critical until he got hurt, right? He was very critical.
He was amazing.
And
he
there
amazing.
Is success, yeah, until he got hurt.
Yes. Yes, he was amazing in that playoff series. And I think what sort of worked against Ryan Johansson over the past 3 years is that, I mean, in a way, I think that performance and the what if he hadn't gotten hurt, what that could have meant for the Predators and potentially winning the Stanley Cup, I think that has worked against him for the past 3 years because you've seen what he can do when he's motivated and when he's playing on the top of his game. So whenever he's not playing like that, it looks worse by comparison. And I think the fact that he has proven he can do that and hasn't been able to do it with the same frequency over the past 3 years, you know, I do think in a way it has worked against them.
All right.
In the minds of fans.
Yep. I don't disagree with that. So, second line, you're going to have Matt Duchene centering. I don't think there's going to be any argument there. Who's going to be on either side of Duchene?
Kyle Turris and Mikael Granlund.
Okay. So, no drama there. So, you think that's – and so, how do we think that line is going to look?
I don't know because I've really never seen it before because they really have no experience together.
Okay, so let me ask it this way. How do you feel about Turris then being on the wing? I'll phrase it that way.
Well, where else are you going to put him? I mean, that's yep. if you want to take advantage of Kyle Turris' skill set, where are you going to put him? And that was the entire issue during the first half of the season with the former coach, was the former coach did not put him in a position to succeed, in my opinion. And he was playing fourth-line center when he wasn't being scratched. So John Hines hopes that putting him in a top-six role will allow him to continue to play better, which he was doing under John Hines because he had more responsibility. But, this is a conversation for a different time, but, you know, with a flat salary cap next season and the cap hovering around there for possibly longer depending on league revenue, you know, I think a prudent financial decision that the Predators should seriously consider is buying out Kyle Turris during the summertime. Now, that doesn't affect our current conversation, but I think it's a conversation that needs to be had.
And obviously the key to that line on the return to play would be Ken Granlund. You know, you want to go back to, you know, they get their magic back. Can he get his magic back heading into the pause? Because obviously we know he was playing quite well under head coach John Hines.
Yes, he was. And it kind of goes back to the Turris a little bit in the sense that those are the two players who saw the largest increase in their responsibilities after the coaching change. I mean, if you just look at time on ice, but if you want to break it down to even more, whether it's, you know, what line they were playing on, how much power play time, how much penalty kill time they were getting, you know, John Hines treated those two a lot differently than Pierre Laviolette did in terms of how often he put them on the ice in big-time situations.
Okay, now the most consistent line all year was the third line. Nick Bedino centering that third line with Craig Smith on one side, Rocco Grimaldi on the other. So we expect that he is not going to mess with that formula that has worked all year. But I guess the big question is, and we'll just stick with the theme that you've been putting out there with, can they recapture their magic? Can they just keep their magic intact? Can they come back after 4 months and pick up where they left off?
I think so, because, you know, they play a no-frills style of game. You know, they're not a line that's reliant on skill, like the Johansson line and the Duchesne line. They're a pretty straightforward bunch. They're fast. They shoot the puck. They get around the net. I think it's easier to replicate or to pick up where you left off when your line plays like that versus if you're more focused on skill, playing in more of an east-west game versus a north-south game. So I'm confident that they'll pick up where they left off.
All right, and finally, that fourth line. How do you think John Hines is going to comprise the fourth line?
Well, based on the first week of camp, the likeliest combination is Kelly Yarncroke, Colton Sissons, and Austin Watson, which I find to be interesting. You know, you have three veteran players and then three players who have experience playing together in the past, but down the stretch of the season, Austin Watson was frequently scratched under John Hines. I'm curious about what perhaps changed in John's mind to possibly put Austin back into the lineup more regularly. But, if that's the line I know it's the quote-unquote fourth line, so it's not the line that, most people are focused on. But, I really liked the play individually of Jakob Trenin and Colin Blackwell during the course of the season. And that's the line I think that both of those players would go on. Personally, I would, if I had to choose, I would put one of them in the lineup over Austin Watson from a statistical standpoint. But I understand what John is trying to do with the line he has on the ice.
Okay, you took it. We know that Kelly Yarncroke and Colton Sissons will be definitely on that line. But I was going to say the one that was intriguing, it does look like right now they're going to start with Austin Watson. Certainly he's got all the experience this time of year. But as you said, he was not in the lineup when they came to pause. In fact, the fourth line, I believe, when they hit the pause button after the Montreal win, was what, Kyle Turris? Wasn't even
was
Victor Arvidsson and Trenin?
I think Trenin, Turris, and Arvidsson was the quote-unquote fourth line in
right.
The last game of the regular season.
Yeah. So, but do you think Trenin or Blackwell would be first up if they made a change?
Well, I think that Blackwell had played more games during the regular season, at least offhand. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was certainly in the lineup more often than Trenin. But I like Trenin as a potential breakout performer, just because he has the physical frame and the scoring ability. I think that works well in the postseason. You know, he's a big guy. You know, he's got a good shot. He's not afraid to mix it up. We saw him, buckle the knees of the Den Chara, for God's sake, if you remember that.
Oh yeah.
So I think Trenin. I like Trenin as if he could get into the lineup. As if you had to ask me who was my choice for the Freddie Goudreau in 2017, Rocco Grimaldi in 2019 breakout performer role, I would put Jakob Trenin.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. By the way, I think there's no doubt in the small samples that we've seen Jakob Trenin, he's got by far the biggest upside. There's no doubt about it. He was making things happen, right, when he was out there. And I'm not taking anything away from Colin Blackwell. And like going back to the beginning part, Austin Watson has all the experience, and he's had good playoff games in series, right? He was critical in that run to the Stanley Cup. I mean, that the penalty kill that he was a big part of, I mean, they shut everybody down that playoff run. But that was, that was years ago. So we're going off right now. I don't disagree with that. I think Trenin, I'm very curious to see, while we have an idea right now, but I'll be very curious when it's time to make the decision on August the 2nd, if indeed that is the fourth line.
Yeah, and, you know, I asked John Hines this question the other day. I asked him, at what point would he like to have a clear idea of what his lineup is going to be for game one against Arizona? And he said, by the end of this week or early in the week in Edmonton. So I think the lineup that they put on the ice for the exhibition game against Dallas a week from Thursday will be as close to the real thing as you're going to get for game one against Arizona on August 7th.
Okay, we know what the first D pairing will be, the captain Roman Josi,
yeah, no shock
and
there.
Ryan Ellis. So let's quickly talk about Roman Josi. So Roman Josi gets the nod. First time he's been a finalist for the Norris Trophy. He's in good company with Carlson and Hedmonton. Can he be the first Predator defenseman to actually win the award? Which is hard to believe.
Well, I think he should. Yeah.
Considering that's what they've been known for, right?
Right. And it's hard to believe the fact that he's only the third Predators defenseman to be a finalist.
Right.
You know, not just the fact that – just not the fact – I mean, it's a bit – it boggles my mind that no Predators defenseman has ever won the award. But then when you consider the amount of high-quality defensemen that have come through or have been in Nashville, you know, only three have been Norris Trophy finalists: Shea Weber multiple times, P.K. Subban, and now Roman Josi. You know, I think that Roman should win the award. I think I've been pretty clear throughout the last several months, even before the regular season ended, that Roman Josi should be the favorite for the award. And I think a lot of people were coming around on that idea when the regular season ended. My gut tells me, though, that while I think there are enough voters for the award who see Roman Josi's all-around impact, there's also a lot of voters who simply look at points and say John Carlson had 75 points, which is 10 more than Roman Josi, and that's enough for me to vote. So, you know, I hope that Roman wins because I think he absolutely deserves it. But something tells me it's not going to be that easy when you have to convince when you think about some of the voters that vote on the award.
Yeah. Okay. Second D pairing, is it Ekholm and Fabbro?
Yes.
Okay. And finally, the third D pairing. Is it going to be the third D pairing that we saw going into the break, the pause, Holzer and Tenorti, the two big trees, or is it going to be Ham, Hughes, and Weber?
I think for game one of Arizona, I think it's going to be Tenorti and Holzer. But I would not be surprised if basically the third pairing is swapped out like every other game. Like if Holzer and Tenorti started game one and it was Ham, Hughes, and Weber in game two, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if John rotates the third pair. But I think just based on the amount of ice time that Jared Tenorti had under John Hines, I mean, I know Holzer was a trade deadline acquisition, so he was a smaller body of work with the team. But, you know, the most used defensive pair for John Hines in the 28 games that he coached was Jared Tenorti and Matthias Ekholm. So I think that Tenorti has the edge as the quote-unquote fifth defenseman, which it makes Holzer the sixth by default.
Okay. And finally, game one.
Oh, God.
Who will be in between the pipes? The question I'm sure John Hines is already sick of. Who will be in between the pipes for game one?
Oh, man. It's a tough question. It really is. But
save the best for last.
I have maintained that UC Soros should start game one. I think when you look at this series from an analytical standpoint, which I know that I do because I'm a huge nerd, when I look at this series from an analytical standpoint, the Arizona Coyotes have arguably the most underrated goaltending tandem in the league, and I'm sure you'll talk about this with Tyson Nash, Darcy Kemper and Antti Raanta,
yep,
both of whom were fabulous this season. If you're looking at it, I mean, I know that it's more than just numbers. You have to actually play the game. But when you look at the series, when you plug in UC Soros versus one of those two, and then versus when you look at Pecorine versus one of those two, it gives the Predators a greater chance to win if UC Soros is in that. So I expect both goaltenders to play in that series, especially with 3 games and 4 days to start with back-to-backs in games 2 and 3. But I would go with UC Soros in game one. That's my call.
Very interesting. Okay, we'll see as we get a little bit closer how indeed that plays out. Adam, good stuff. Won't be the last time we chat. We'll be here, I guess, tomorrow and Thursday as well. So thanks for doing this, and we'll chat soon.
All right, Darren, talk to you soon.
All right, go check out his work at The Athletic. He covers the Predators. He's Adam Vinken, and we do appreciate him stopping. That was good, kind of going through the roster. What do we think it's going to look like for Game 1? All right, we'll come back. Let's talk about the opponent with Tyson Nash, former player and now TV analyst for the Coyotes. He's been doing it for many, many years, does a really good job, full of personality. We're going to learn a little bit more about the opponent the Predators will face in this qualifying round. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.